Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another Imprint Companion. Yes, that's right, where we deep dive on the delicious discs from the incredible people at Imprint Films, Australia's premier boutique Blu-ray label. I am, of course, one half of this show, Blake Howard, and I am joined by the Last Video Store's Alexi Toliopoulos. Hello, my friend. How are you?
I'm very well, Blake, and as always, it's my pleasure to be your better half on these podcasts.
You absolutely are. And speaking of better halves or bad halves, we are talking the Imprint Asia batch, our first one. And the two films that we're covering out of the three today are Lost in the Stars, which is probably one of the most exciting releases from Imprint because it may be the most recent Imprint film. It was made in 2023, made a bit of a splash on the festival circuit.
A new release film. That's exciting, mate. It's exciting.
It's so rare for us and just a classic. I mean, there are probably 20 or 30 Zatoichi films, but The Blind Swordsman, Zatoichi, Takeshi Kitano from Battle Royale, Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, legendary filmmaker and actor, beat Kitano, some folks know him as, his mates call him that. Also out in this batch, we're going to cover both of those. Very exciting. But we might start with you guys listening to a trailer and probably not understanding a word of that trailer for Lost in the Stars. All right, Lex. Hi-Fei's wife, Lee Muzi, disappears during their anniversary trip. When she reappears, he insists that she is not his wife. Hi-Fei returns to Chiang Mai, a renowned international lawyer, for help. And as Chen Mai's investigation into this bizarre case progresses, more mysteries start to emerge. Adapted from a 90s Russian film, Trap for a Lonely Man, and from a Robert Thomas stage play of the same name, it's a wickedly entertaining one from start to finish. And it was a blockbuster. This Hitchcockian crime mystery is produced by Chen, one of the big contemporary giants in Chinese cinema. Lex, what did you think of this? I would have to say, absolutely lusciously made movie.
Well, Blake, firstly, I would like to say that what an exciting choice to be number one of Imprint's new sub-label, Imprint Asia. I think it sets a really cool precedent for what they could be doing with this new label, this new exploration of Asian cinema. Because we have a few Asian films that have kind of passed their way through Imprint before, but I think dedicating themselves to it this way is really exciting for like world cinema and getting a chance to see things that you would not be able to see otherwise in this country. And I think this is exactly emblematic of that. This is a film that was not really on my radar at all. Only a few people I follow on Letterboxd had even seen it. One of them being you minutes before I logged it as well. But I think that this is exciting because it shows what the difference is between Imprint and Imprint Asia. Imprint is a lot about rediscovery and stuff. I think Imprint Asia is a lot about celebration and introduction to films. Like, we're looking forward to seeing what else they're doing, but to make this the first one, which is a new release film, something cool, something weird, it's very exciting. Now, my thoughts on the film. This is such an absolutely joyously wild ride.
Yeah,
the twists and turns in this thriller were something so unexpected where I genuinely had no idea where we're going. It takes some huge leaps. You have to buy in, and I think they do a really successful job of putting you into the mind of the protagonist, where they don't really know what's going on either, but you're a little bit separated. You're just that little bit separated where you're kind of, as a viewer, often the last person to learn things. And I think that's a very cool way for a thriller to go about. Sometimes it can be difficult. Sometimes it can be difficult to land that kind of idea of the audience being a little bit further behind than the characters. But I think the way this film flows out is truly delightful.
I think it's so great. I'm glad you had a wild ride. I too was like, sometimes as if you watch lots of movies, you kind of go, I got this pegged. I know where this is going, or
Yes.
maybe I kind of like, oh, how are you going to surprise me? And I was kind of getting distracted because it is absolutely gorgeously directed. It's so luscious. The island locations are amazing. The bright
Looks
colors.
just looks fantastic. It sounds great.
Yeah, luscious colors, reds, greens, very moody. Obviously, the Hitchcockian gets thrown around a lot, but I think that sometimes Hitchcock in Technicolor knew what physiological reactions that the audience subliminally has to certain uses of color and certain uses of memory and perception from different characters. And so it does a fantastic job of manipulating you as you're playing along with this ride. And it's so bright and beautiful and composed that I'm like, okay, well, look, I might know where this is going. I'm just gonna just sit here and relish how gorgeous this looks. And genuinely, it knocked me for six. I had no clue where it was going by the end. It was rolling on with every new bit of information, like that sort of positively took you down maybe where you thought the story was going. It would then like flash you into a flashback or tell you a new morsel about these characters that completely changed what we'd just seen and then completely informed everything you'd seen up to that point. So for me, I was like genuinely thrilled by this. I had such a great time and I was like, man, this is sensational. And I think you hit the nail on the head for Imprint Asia, Lex, which is like celebrate the big hitters, the huge totemic icons of this genre of cinema or this region of cinema, but then also like give me what's new, give me what is like really fresh, really exciting, and like almost like it feels like it's almost like backing in some of their new emerging talent. So it's so cool. So
Yes.
had a great time with this. For folks who are here, this one is a little bit light on special features as you would imagine, simply because it's a brand new film. There's no retrospectives and not a lot of actor interviews. And in fact, it probably would go worse knowing more about it. I think if you were looking at an Imprint Asia title, I would be suggesting this one first and foremost, because it's something that A, hasn't had a release in this country before, and B, is so genuinely exciting and will like really tip you over the edge. But yeah, such a terrific one there. Really had a great time too.
I can't imagine someone watching this and not having fun. Like, it's
Yeah.
just a really, really fun thriller that captures this kind of like this heightened tone and this heightened world where you do have to buy in a little bit. But I think it's like it introduces everything so nicely that there's no challenge in buying into like the silliness of the plot and the
Yes.
contrivances and that heightened world of this film. There's no challenge in buying in. I think there's really excellent filmmaking that allows you to do that. Like, genuinely, when I say it, I can't imagine anyone not having a really fun time with this film. This is
Well,
a really high, easy recommendation. And I think, Blake, I wish we had watched this together, or I
oh.
wish I'd watched it with a friend because it is. I just watched it by myself, and there's so much joy in that discovery. I wish I had someone to just turn to with my mouth open every
Just
now and then,
go,
go like, "Oh my
what?
God, can you believe what
What?
we're seeing right now?"
We needed that. In the world of the Kendrick and Drake beef, there's been a lot of great reaction videos, Lex, where people are sitting together listening to tunes, unpacking. And I feel like that totally could have been us. We could have been sitting there just like just aghast. Like, oh. That kind of reaction. So great. But no, it was really excellent. Let's move on to like what is, realistically, it's a 2003 film, so now we're like 21 years old, but was a classic at the time, was carrying on a classic tradition of samurai cinema. Let's talk a little bit about The Blind Swordsman, Zatoichi.
いうことですね。いうことなんですか。おい、サイクロの音変わったな。
何言っちゃいかんで。
인지시켜.
ねえ、ただのあんまじゃねえだろ。
あんたも血の匂いがするな。こんな狭いところで刀そんな風に。
From director Takeshi Kitano comes The Blind Swordsman, Zatoichi.In an empire ruled by fear, the people's only hope is the ultimate weapon, Zatoichi, a blind nomadic samurai whose sword has made him a hero and whose courage has made him a legend. Now, this is a reboot of sorts of a classic long-running Japanese samurai series of films called Zatoichi, the Blind Swordsman. Blake...Was this your introduction to this franchise back in the day when it was first released?
100%. Yeah. So I saw this. It was my first time. I saw Beat Kitano was behind it and starring in it. I was like, okay, like he'd started to become one of my guys that I was like, okay, I'm interested. Then I went back and I believe, I want to say it's a Criterion. There might be like a Criterion box set that is the Zatoichi. And I remember...
I've got it, baby. It's a proud possession of mine.
So good that you've got it. You know, I borrowed it off our friend, the great Garth Franklin. And I remember it was when my daughter Hazel was really little and I was just, you know, home quite a bit looking after her on like paternity leave and stuff like that. And I would just play these movies because they're black and white. I would just have them on like rolling. So I got to like be exceptionally familiar with him at that time. But so I haven't watched them in ages because I watched like, I can't even remember how many films were in that box set, but I literally watched...everyone from start to finish, and I was like, it does get quite repetitive and some of the quality of them is better than others and some are, you know, more composed beautifully than others and all those other things, and some of the stories are just like flat out better. So this reboot,
but it's like James Bond, mate. You kind of know what you're going, you know, once you're in there.
I love that. Once you get the rhythm, it's like, I want this is what I want right now. This is what I want in my life. I'm going for this. So no, but coming back to this, one of the things that really struck meis just the boldness of the filmmaking, because in a lot of the Zatoichi, or the Zatoichi the Blind Swordsman, because this title's a little bit jumbled compared to the original, it was always about the characters never really knowing who he was, never really having an understanding of his full potential. And it was always this sort of powder keg waiting for like, when is he going to do his thing? When is he going to show them? And what I love about the reboot is that,in like 1 second at the beginning of the movie, you see the carnage that he can deliver. And you can see that other rival clans of samurai know his reputation. So he kind of exists in their world. And it's only that he's such a nomadic traveler that he goes around to new towns is where people don't realize who he is. And then it sort of comes up. And all the intrigue of the particular region that he goes into is what I love and gets built up in this movie. And it does...It takes massive swings, and I really, really liked it. And it was like Zatoichi and like 13 assassins of like the last probably 20 years are two of my favorite samurai movies because they just are balls to the wall fantastic from start to finish. So, yeah, I really loved going back on this one. What did you think going back to Zatoichi?
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you, man. Like, this was my introduction to that series. And then I did that same exploration when I got that box set, jumping through all of them. I'd say my highlights of those original series would be the first one is great. But then there's also, I can't remember which order the title goes, but it's like Zatoichi and Yojimbo. Is that the one where there's where they kind of...That's a fun movie, especially, you know, it's a good little entry point in if you're already a cinephile. I really enjoy this film. I love Takeshi Kitano. Over the last couple of years, he's been an era of exploration for me, catching up with a few of his gangster films.
And I think that gangster resume. great gangster resume.
Really great gangster resume. And yeah. Hopefully seeing this one come out here, and it's been a film I'd want to catch up with for quite some time. Because I've been going through Takeshi Kitano, I'm like, oh, I really want to see this film again. I really want to jump back into it. And it has been a little bit hard to find on the shores of Australia. So another, I would say, genius choice or imprint to put out in one of their first three films. I absolutely had a fantastic time watching it. I'd say my real highlights are the score is incredible. There is just the music in this film is so enveloping and so interesting. It really is one of the things that kind of draws you deeper into it. And the other thing that I love and appreciate the most is it still bears Takeshi Kitano's really kind of dark sense of humor in a way that's interesting, because it's not exactly the same kind of mode as his gangster films. It's a little bit different, and I found that really effective and evocative. I love this movie. I'm glad that it retained some of its archival special features as well, with some interviews and also like a making of featurette. Dude, I think home run. And there's still one film that we have yet to watch called
The Sea Is Watching, which is another Japanese film from 2002, so a year before. Mm-hmm. This film is a Ken Kumai film, and it's the final screenplay by Akira Kurosawa. So it's a romance story set in a 19th century brothel. So, you know, probably has some connections to what would later be a gargantuan hit, Memoirs of a Geisha, set in that sort of same sort of time period. It was called at the time like some of his finest work, which is for Kurosawa insane. It's pretty great. Didn't get a chance to watch it on this one, but I'm so glad to have a genuine discovery and also a very, very pleasing rediscovery on this one. So really looking forward to more Imprint Asia coming soon. Guys, look, thank you so much for listening to this short and sharp Imprint Companion on Imprint Asia's first batch. We'll be coming back with more very soon, catching up on March and then moving into an epic month of April. Lex, when people are not hearing you be the better half of this podcast, where can they find you?
Well, you can hear me be the whole damn thing on The Last Video Store, which is my podcast where I talk to interesting people about the films they love in a style of an old school video rentals combo, which is so much fun. We've got Goran Stolevski on at the moment. We've got Troy Casadaly coming up. And coming up, we've got a Furiosa special. I'm talking George Miller. I'm talking Anya Taylor-Joy. I'm talking Chris Hemsworth. Wow. I chat to them all about... Far out, man. I don't think I'm breaking embargo to say this right now. One of my favorite films of the year.
Yeah, it's a banger. You saw it twice in as many days, right?
I've seen it twice in as many days, and I'm sure I'll see it even more times during this year once it gets its full cinematic release. But you saw it as well, Blake.
I did. I really, really enjoyed it. I think that it is very different from Fury Road, as in Fury Road is a locomotive, and this is the story of a life, but nonetheless, just George Miller does things on screen where you're like, I'm sure that driver is dead. I'm sure that stuntman is dead. I'm sure I don't actually know how they did this, and I kind of just want to believe that the wasteland exists, and he takes us through a portal to just capture it in the way that only he can. So, I had a really great time with Furiosa 2. I'm so glad that you did. Really looking forward to those ones as well. Guys, thank you again so much for listening. You're listening to this on Imprint Companion Pod or in the One Heat Minute Productions feed. But if you're not in the One Heat Minute Productions feed, check out what we're doing very soon. I've got a very special bonus episode of One Heat Minute. That's right. The show that started it all is coming back because the flagship returns. The editor of Heat, The Insider, Miami Vice 2006 Academy Award winning editor William Goldenberg, who edited things like Argo, Zero Dark Thirty.
My God.
Yes, he is coming onto the show. He has amazing stories to talk through. And also Graham Moore, who's the Academy Award-winning screenwriter of The Imitation Game, who is very good friends with Bill Goldenberg, comes onto the show too. So we both get to geek out. So Double Academy Award winners coming to One Heat Minute.
Oh my God. This is the first time I'm hearing this, by the way, everybody. I'm about to spew. Oh my God. That's awesome. So wow.
Very exciting. It's a nearly 2-hour conversation that sprawls between everything from the first scene of his that he cut. It also does a classic. We go into his favorite minute of the movie. We talk The Insider. We talk touches of Miami Vice. We talk his entire career. It's a real ripper. And if you're not aware, William Goldberg also edited The Imitation Game and edited The Outfit, both of which were written, and The Outfit was directed by Graham Moore. So that's why they're friends. So really great episode coming up. And then I'm headlong into our miniseries, Too Many Minutes on Sneakers. And I am almost ready to announce the next Minute by Minute podcast on One Heat Minute Productions.
Whoa.
That is going through every single minute of the film. And I am going to ask Lex not to say what I'm showing him, but just to simply look at the logo that I have already created for it.
That's so good. Wow. Great logo. And very fun movie to do. A movie I've accused Blake of doing a podcast about already.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.